Welcome to the Upward Running Podcast, where faith fuels your fitness journey.
Welcome back to the Upward Running Podcast. This is your one stop each week to be motivated and inspired to get off the couch and onto the running trail, where you can in turn inspire others to do the same. Let's learn, laugh, and leap into running together, giving God the glory for what we are able to do in His name. Amen. Well, I am your running host, Dean Thompson, coming to you once again from the Upward Sports Studio. Well, we're going to talk about something that gets closer to my heart every year. Aging. How should we look at it? Sure, we're slowing down as we age, but are there some good things to come from it? We'll talk about that. And then I'm going to talk about negotiating with yourself. We all do it. How do we get it right? That's the question. And joining me once again for those stories and much more is Upward Running Director Mitchell Hollis.
Well, it's launch day, Dean. Today is the official May 1st is when we're recording this, and this is the official launch of all things Upward Running. You know, you may be out there and you're thinking, I thought y'all have already launched that. Well, kind of we have. You know, we've had some soft launches. We've had some churches start the church programming, and then we kind of stopped on the marketing because we knew that there were going to be some glitches, things we had to get right. You know, I talk about the church model, you know, kind of like an old truck that's been sitting for several years. Yeah. You know, we kind of fired it back up. We've got it running. Well, that is all the kinks are worked out. The new version of the app, version 2 for Android, is now out there. You know, we had the second version for Apple and iPhone a couple months back. We've had all kind of issues with the Android version. So that is now out. So today is the official day that we're pushing everything out the door. So why do I say that? If you are a runner out there and you are a Christ follower and you love the sport of running, then guess what that makes you? The perfect candidate to become an Upward Running coach.
That's right.
Bring this ministry to your community, to your church. We've made it simple. It's a simple way. It's a simple process to do it. You can coach this in your church. And like we've always said, I've experienced it. You've experienced it. Once you coach a 5K challenge, it will change your perspective on how you look at the sport of running. So if you're out there and that describes you, give us a call. Reach out to us. Shoot us an email. Go to upwardrunning.com. You can go to upward.org, any of the websites. You can schedule a call, get on and talk to some of our representatives, and they'll walk you through what it looks like to coach an Upward Running at your church.
And let me say this, if you're out there and you're thinking, well, I'm not really a coach. I don't feel like I could be a coach. I don't feel like I know enough about the Bible to teach this class. Oh, don't worry. Mm-hmm. It's all there. It's easy. And you can do it. If you have the heart to want to reach people for Christ and you just love running, you can do this.
As long as you can hit play on your computer.
That's right.
you can coach this class. So if some people like us for us to use different words. So facilitate. You can facilitate in your community.
That's right.
But what you'll quickly become, or what you'll quickly learn, is you will quickly become a coach.
That's right.
And that will just happen. And it's an incredible thing. I mean, coaching is one of my favorite things to do.
Yep.
Encouraging people, getting people to see that, seeing that spark in their eye when they get that moment of, especially like on week 8, when they go from, you know, what they perceive of 8 minutes of running to 20 minutes of running, and to see what happens during that 20 minutes. I mean, it for a lot of people, it literally changes their life in 20 minutes because they went from doing something that they thought, I will never be able to do this. How many people in your classes have you heard say that night, there's no way I'm going to be able to run 20 minutes?
That's right.
And then they go out, and 20 minutes later, they're like, I just ran 20 minutes.
Yep.
And it's an incredible thing to see. So go check it out. Go to upwardrunning.com. Check out the Becoming a Coach tab. And think about it, pray about it, bring this to your community, bring it to your church, and get it started.
Yeah. Well, I'm trying this new thing. So Debbie and I bought hydrogen water bottles.
Mm.
Have you heard of this?
You've been listening to Gary Brekka.
Yes. Yeah. I think that's where we're, I think that we actually got it on a link.
He's the one really pushing that.
Yes, yeah. Yes. And so we just got them yesterday.
Let me know how that goes because I've been thinking about it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we found some that were, most of them are over $100, even a couple hundred dollars. And we found some for like $60. And so we bought a couple of them. And it's a weird thing. You put water in the water bottle and you press this little button and all of a sudden the water starts getting cloudy. Mm-hmm. And it's just.
Now he recommends, I'm saying he recommends the water bottles. He actually promotes the tablets.
Yes.
That you can put in. Cause they talk about those water bottles. Number one, they're expensive. Yep. But number two, they start to lose whatever capability after a period of time.
Well, I heard that, but then when I really looked into this water bottle, that doesn't appear to be true. So I've heard both.
Does the water bottle say that or?
No.
Because he talks about how over time it'll lose it. And evidently the tablets are pretty cheap.
Yeah, I've heard that.
But you just drop in any water.
Yeah, I've heard that. I've heard that.
Well, yeah, let me know how that goes. Because I'm kind of geeking out on all this.
Yeah.
Body hacking and, you know.
It's a lot of fun.
It is. It's a lot of new information, but it's like we've said in a couple podcasts, it seems like everybody is starting to say the same thing.
Yeah.
Which tells you something.
That's good. Good. And it's good. Good to hear because we've ignored our health for so long.
Sure.
Yeah. Our post of the week comes from Sarah Padgett. She says, Alexander, who's 10 years old, did his first 6-hour endurance race yesterday. He officially finished with 22 miles and finished loop 12, 24 miles in 6 hours and 5 minutes. He will now hold the Tennessee state record for 6-hour race by a 10-year-old with 22 miles. I'm so thankful for the Run for God Upward family we found just over a year ago. My husband, Dexter, also did 52 miles in just under 12 hours. He was hoping to go for 24 hours but had to tap out. I attempted a 6-hour, but had to bow out super early due to heart issues. I just thought this was a good time to bring up. We've heard a lot of talk over the years about young people. Mm-hmm. And for some people, they think young people should not be running 22 miles. Mm-hmm. And I get it. I get why people would say that. Mm-hmm. But it depends.
Yeah.
It depends on the child. And in this case, Alex loves running. His face lights up.
Yeah.
When he goes for a run with his dad, and he just loves it. And as a matter of fact, I went over to the, it was at Camp Jordan. I went over there after their 6-hour race was over and while Dexter was still running. And that kid was running around climbing trees and doing all sorts of crazy stuff after he had run the 22 miles. He certainly didn't hurt himself.
Yeah.
So it depends. Now, I will say this. You don't want to push kids to do endurance events, I don't think, unless that kid comes to you and says, I want to do this. And you say, now that's going to be hard. Mm-hmm. And they say, I want to do it anyway. And you say, I'm going to push you I'm not going to let you quit because that's a lesson in and of itself.
Sure.
So that's kind of the way I feel like you deal with kids.
Yeah. I mean, we've had these conversations many times through the years. I look at, you know, The person that came to my mind when I heard about this was, you know, Winter Vanecki. You know, Winter was, she came through the Iron Kids and triathlon ranks with Lane. She was a few years ahead of him, but when she was 14, she was the youngest person to do a marathon on every continent. And I remember her mom got just, because she was, had a pretty big platform. She created a, it was the nonprofit. I'm trying to think. Was it Team Winter? Anyway, her dad died of some kind of cancer, and she, at a young age, she kind of championed a nonprofit to raise awareness for that particular type of cancer. Anyway, so she was doing these huge endurance things on a big scale. I mean, she was getting national notoriety. She was on the Today Show and things like that. And I remember her mom just got so much hate over this, but I knew Winter personally, and she really loved challenging herself.
Yeah.
And I think there's so much value in teaching kids to do hard things. Now, 100%, you should not force kids to do something like this. For sure. I don't think there's anything wrong with encouraging it.
Absolutely.
Encouraging them to do hard things at a young age. You know, Winter now, she's an Olympic aerial. What do they call that?
Skier.
Freestyle skier. She does all the tricks and the flips and all that in the Olympics. And it's all because of what she learned at a very young age. So, you know, the people that come so vile and they come at these parents, because I've had it in my life, you know, when Lane was young, Lane shouldn't be doing this and that. And my rebuttal is it's better than 12 hours of screen time. That so many kids have today. Where's the outcry over that?
Yeah.
That is a much bigger issue than a kid running a marathon.
Absolutely.
By far. But you don't hear the outcry there. And I believe it's because, I might be stepping on toe. That's, phones nowadays have become a pacifier.
Yeah.
With very young children.
Well, and the parents are doing it too in a lot of cases.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I'm just going to leave that there.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Alex is a delightful little boy.
Sure.
Even afterwards, he wanted to hug all the participants. They were doing laps.
Yeah.
And every time somebody came around, he wanted to hug these runners and try to encourage them as much as he could. And some of them, you could tell, they came around and they just looked forward to hugging Alex every time they came around the track.
So was this the same race kind of that you did back?
No, this was just a... just a 12-hour, 24-hour endurance run. What I did was, last man standing kind of thing.
Okay.
So, and Dexter only ran 52 miles. He did 81 here not too long ago, but he's...
He only ran 52
yeah, well,
miles.
Listen to in what his you're mind, saying, Dean. In his mind, that's what he thinks.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
He's going to get his 100 miles sooner or later. He's going to keep working on it. He's new to this. He's only been doing it for a little over a year. So, he's doing really well. And then Danny from Team Coolidge also. Yeah. Shout out to Danny. Danny ran 46 miles in the 12-hour run, and he had never run more than a marathon before.
Wow.
So congratulations to him. Our run of the week comes from Joni Erin Adams. She says, I ran 6 miles this morning. No big story, except I forgot to actually start my watch for about a quarter mile or so. I was at 5.94 when my grandson showed up in my driveway with my great-granddaughter to spend the day with me. She's almost 4 years old and was still sleeping. I tucked her in my bed and ran 0.06 in front of my house because I couldn't stop at 5.94. Typical runner.
Joni is my people.
There are two types of runners out there. Your type and my type.
Me and you. Yeah.
Yeah. A matter of fact, I think it was just yesterday. I got 8.99 miles yesterday.
Dean, that is just so dumb.
Well, I was done. I was finished. I did what I came to do.
I mean, what is that? Like three steps? Three more steps?
Well, to be fair, I normally probably wouldn't stop at 0.9. I might stop at 0.94, but not 0.99. But it was a conversion thing because I was running. I have my watch calculating kilometers. And so I don't really know exactly how many miles it was. It just happened to be just a little less than 9 in this case. But, you know, either way, I don't think there's
whatever motivates you.
Yes. I don't think there's anything wrong with doing an extra loop in the parking lot to make sure you get your extra little bit. And I don't think there's anything wrong with stopping.
Yeah.
I think it just depends on you. You know how many extra miles I have run that I didn't record? Think about at cross-country races, when I'm watching a cross-country race, how many miles do I run in a cross-country race?
Back and forth.
Now, I have turned my watch on just to see how many miles I get in a cross-country race, and I have gotten in over 2 miles at a 5K cross-country race in the past at times. So, I get in the miles. It's not like I'm not getting the miles in.
I'm pretty sure people that do like 8.99 and stop their watch, I'm pretty sure they're like clinically sociopathic, like that.
That's very possible.
That is, you've got some screws loose if you do that.
Well, our trivia question from last week was this: Bill Rogers wore something very unique in his 1975 win of the Boston Marathon. What was it? First, let me say this. I worded that question wrong. I said his debut win. It was his debut win, but it wasn't his debut in the Boston Marathon, just to be clear. We'll talk more about that. But there were a few things different about this race. But the thing I was looking for here is that Bill Rogers wore a white T-shirt with, it said Boston across the top, and it said GBTC, Greater Boston Track Club. He wrote it in magic marker. That was what he wore. Now, I know a lot of you think, well, back in that day, probably people did that. But even back in that day, they all wore singlets just like they do these days. And for whatever reason, he wore this T-shirt. And I just thought it's a great touch to me. Just somebody who just like, I just want to run the race. I don't care about all this extra stuff. So there were other things that were different about that race, too, like the fact that he stopped to tie his shoes twice in that race. And still ran 209.55, the fifth fastest time in history. Stopped to tie his shoes twice. He also apparently stopped for water breaks, kind of walking through the water breaks a couple of times too. So he wasn't a big-time marathoner at the time.
Yeah.
Became one after that, obviously. But
I don't know why that's making me think of this, but I saw a picture just the other day. You know, we're in NFL draft season. And have you seen the picture of Brett Favre when he was drafted?
I don't think so.
It was kind of showing a then and now contrast of, I mean, you know how what draft parties look like nowadays. I mean, yeah. It's like a big, you know, when they get the phone call, there's like 200 people around them and they're in a ballroom and it's like a big event. Well, Brett Favre, it's the magic marker that made me think of it. It was Brett Favre in his bedroom with like probably 8 or 10 of his buddies, and they all had on T-shirts, and I think it said like Team Favre or something like that.
Yeah.
And he's on his cordless phone with the antenna sticking way up.
Yeah.
And it was just like, it was just showing the contrast between what a draft phone call looks like now and when Brett Favre got his. It was just like, it's just a bunch of guys hanging out at the house.
And now you got Deion Sanders' son. Did you see what he did?
No.
He created an entire room that was made, I mean, like decorations, words on the wall that said legendary and all this stuff that he created an entire room just for the NFL draft. That's where we've come from.
Yeah.
Bunch of guys in their bedroom to creating our own, remodeling
arguably
our house.
One of the greatest quarterbacks of all time when he got drafted.
Yeah.
You know.
That's good stuff.
But it was, they all had on shirts that were, you could tell they wrote them with Sharpies.
Yeah.
Because, you know, they weren't print shops like they are nowadays for, you know, 5 shirts.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah, I love it. Well, but Bill Rogers became one of just a beloved runner. Everybody loved Bill Rogers. He was always positive. He's still a really great running ambassador. He's a good guy for the sport still to this day. He went through, you know, Bill Rogers Running. There was he had an apparel company at one time. And Bill Rogers, I think, did fairly well for himself. He still runs these days, but not competitively. He's got to be definitely in his 60s, maybe 70s. Anyway, this was his third marathon. So this is also what I wanted to say about this. This was his third Boston Marathon, that particular marathon, which obviously he won and did all this great thing. But he started in 1973 with his first Boston Marathon. He got through 20 miles. He had gone out too fast and he walked home from there after 20 miles because he lived in Boston. And then in 1974, he was 14th. And then, of course, he won. And then he won it 3 more times after that. So Boston Billy, the guy that's named after the Boston Marathon, Boston Billy dropped out of the Boston Marathon and walked home. So the next time that things don't go your way, remember that Boston Billy dropped out of the Boston Marathon and walked home one day before he finally had his big day.
That's hilarious.
Isn't it great?
That's hilarious. Never knew that.
Upward Sports equips churches to run self-sustaining sports ministries in their communities. Whether you're a sports fanatic or on staff at a church, Upward Sports will give you all the tools you need to run a first-class sports ministry that allows you to reach families in your community. Upward Sports offers basketball, soccer, flag football, cheerleading, volleyball, baseball, and softball through league and camp offerings. At Upward Sports, we want to help your church make a difference and give you increased opportunities to share the gospel. Learn more today at upward.org. That's upward.org.
All right, we are back, and you need to submit your story. Again, we talk about this virtually every week, that you have a story and we need to hear it and we want to share it.
Your story is what keeps this podcast alive.
That's right. That's right. So you don't want things to die, do you? Mm-hmm. Good heavens. Get your story in there. Well, here's a novelty race for you. The Empire State Building run-up. Have you ever heard of this?
I haven't.
86 floors, 1,576 stairs. It is 1,050 feet of vertical gain. It's a fifth of a mile vertically. The men's record for doing that is 9 minutes and 33 seconds.
That sounds crazy to me. And
the women's record is 11:23.
Wow. Now, they have one of these type of races in Atlanta, don't they?
I think they do.
I know Doug Kearns is like the always the state champion fireman. They do it in fire gear.
Yeah.
All their gear.
Yep. Yeah, it sounds like a lot of misery, if you ask me.
Sounds like a lot of fun, don't it?
Looks like you have to enter a lottery to get in. There's so many people, and they can only allow so many, obviously. Mm-hmm. You know, you got this stairwell you got to race up. There's a $200-plus entry fee for a race that's going to take you less than half an hour. Of course, everything's expensive in New York, so I guess that's to be expected. I would love to see the Empire State Building, but I remember a few years ago, Debbie and I were in Chicago, and we thought, let's go up in the Sears Tower and go look at the observation deck of the Sears Tower, which is was the tallest building in the world at one time. And we thought that would be cool. Now, I don't know if they call it the Sears. They may not call it the Sears Tower anymore, but hopefully you know what building I'm talking about. And I remember thinking it cost like $10 to go to the top. We almost didn't go because we were like, $10? That's ridiculous just to go up and see something, you know, go observe something. Well, to get to the top of the Empire State Building, to get to the 102nd floor observatory, you have to pay over $80 just to go up there and take a look around. Yes. Yes.
Wow. You've never been to the Empire State Building?
I have not.
Wow.
No.
So I have it's not a cool Empire State Building story. It's a unique story. So Holly and I went to New York. This would have been right after one of the wars. I can't remember. Was it? I think it was right after 9/11.
Yeah.
Or the Gulf War. I can't remember. Anyway, it's been years and years ago. Whatever one of the wars started. And one of the first, we were in the Empire State Building, Holly and I, we were waiting in line to go up, and there was a newspaper laying on the ground. And I picked the newspaper up, and on the front of the newspaper was a picture. It was the New York Times, I guess, or one of the New York papers. It was a picture of a guy that I went to high school with.
Really?
And he was one of the first people, Marshall Edgerton, he was one of the first people killed in whatever that war was.
Oh, my
I don't
goodness.
Know if you remember it. He was from here. He was one of the first. They had like the big, long funeral procession here in Dalton. But anyway, it was just so weird that I was in the Empire State Building waiting to go to the top, look down on the floor, see a newspaper, pick it up, and on the front page is a picture of a guy I went to high school with.
That is crazy.
Crazy.
That's a crazy story. Yeah. Yeah. Well, I don't know if you can go to like the Empire State Building, just go up the stairs.
I wouldn't think so.
Like, I would totally do that if you could. Now, let me tell you a story. Talk about another weird story is when I was in college at Georgia Tech, obviously in downtown Atlanta or near downtown Atlanta. A friend of mine, my roommate, actually, Don Livingston and I had a track workout. For some reason, it was at night. We had this track workout. It was just the two of us. We get through with our track workout and, you know, and coach just says, go run a few miles for a cool down. So we decided to run through the city of Atlanta. Thought it'd be cool to do running at night through the city of Atlanta. And of course, as we're running by the Peachtree Plaza Hotel, which at the time I think was the tallest hotel in the world, that and the one in Detroit that's very similar. We thought it would be cool to go up and look out the observation deck of that hotel. So we went inside. Keep in mind now.
So is that what's now the Westin?
Yes.
Okay.
We just got through with a workout. We're sweaty. We're in shorts and a t-shirt.
Yeah.
And we decide to go in on a night where there's some nightlife going on in Atlanta. And we get in the elevator so we can go to the top. Well, the elevator doesn't go to the top. And we get out of the elevator at the highest floor we could get out. And we had hallways. Couldn't see out at all. And so we thought, well, let's go find some stairs. We'll see if we can go up higher. So we did. We get in the stairwell and we start climbing stairs. And we climb up to where we feel like we're at the top, or I think we are at the top. It's the top of the stairs anyway. And we can't get out. We're stuck in the stairwell. All the doors are locked. And so we decide, we start banging on the door for somebody to let us out. And so somebody finally comes to the door. We're at the restaurant.
The Sundial.
Yeah. Like this really nice, swanky, fancy, swanky restaurant. And here we are. Just got through running. We're all sweaty in shorts and t-shirts. And the lady opens the door and, you know, she's looking at us like, what are you two doing? And Don Livingston goes, hey, how much is a T-bone? I just remember that. And then we just asked her, can we tell us where the elevator is so we can get out of here? And so while we were on our way to the elevator, we got our views of the city of Atlanta on the Sundial restaurant as we walked through the Sundial restaurant in short shorts and a t-shirt one wow. random night of a track workout.
Okay, so we're going down a rabbit hole, but on the Sundial restaurant. So Holly and I, we like to go there. We probably go there once every 2 or 3 years. Just as... I will go to Atlanta for our anniversary and stay a night or two at the Westin, eat at the Sundial. But we were there. Remember when the tornadoes come through Atlanta?
Yeah, yeah.
Remember there was a basketball game going on. You could see the ceiling of the Hawks. I mean, it was, well, our waiter, it was not too long after that. Actually, the Westin had several windows out of the Westin from the tornado. But our waiter was there the night of the tornado. Hmm. And he talked about how creepy it was because you could, I mean, obviously buildings always sway.
Yeah.
But the chandeliers in there really started swaying. And he said wow. You couldn't really tell something was going on because at that height, there wasn't a lot of debris field and you really couldn't hear. And he said until one of the windows broke. And he said it sounded like a train. People were freaking out,
I bet,
running to the inside of the building. But he said the moment one of those windows broke, I guess all the pressure and everything, and he said that was one of the scariest things he's ever been through.
I bet
it was. To be, what, 80-something floors up?
Yeah.
In the middle of a tornado and windows are breaking.
Wow.
So
that's a crazy story.
It's a cool place if you've never been there to eat.
Yeah, I might have to try it out.
It's a pretty cool, because you know the restaurant turns.
Right, right. Yep.
Over the period of like 30 or 45 minutes, it turns. Of course, I say that. I think they stopped that.
Oh, really?
It doesn't turn anymore because I think a kid, something happened, and
goodness.
It doesn't turn anymore. Anyway, I know that's not what this podcast is about. But.
Well, how about a story from another one of our favorite people? Linda Null, it seems, has grown a year older. And she wants to talk about it. This is called Milepost 72. How did I get here so fast? When I turned 60, a dear friend gave me a birthday card. The front of the card said things like, the old 60 is now the new 50. 60 isn't so bad. Everything gets better with age. You're not old. You're just vintage. And so on. Then when you opened the card, it said in big bold letters, don't sweat turning 60 because before you know it, you'll be 70. How's that for a birthday wish? Well, it turns out that she was right. Just like that, it feels like I went from 60 to 70 in the blink of an eye, and I'm left wondering, how did I get here so fast? In the Toby Keith song, Don't Let the Old Man In, there's a chorus that says, how old would you be if you didn't know the day you were born? Truthfully, I'm not sure what the age of 72 is supposed to feel like. On the outside, there are several physical signs that attest to my age, but on the inside, I still feel the same as I've always felt, but much wiser and more grateful. Yet I sometimes bemoan my 72 years and find myself saying, if only I were younger. Many say that age is just a number, but when that number is 72, it can do a number on you. I'm a septuagenarian who is just not ready to be called elderly, old, or even vintage. Can I be honest? When Facebook brings up those memories of years gone by, I sometimes am overwhelmed by sadness. Why? Because those are reminders of what I once could so easily do, and it's more challenging now. With osteoarthritis in one knee, I've had to downsize my running training to 2 days a week on dirt roads to lessen the impact on my body. Since my running has decreased, I have increased my time doing other things I love, hiking and biking. Though I am grateful I can remain physically active through other hobbies, I still miss my old running days, days where I felt like a little Forrest Gump, like I could run forever. In the Bible, the number 7 is considered quite significant, appearing over 700 times throughout both the Old and New Testaments. Furthermore, since God created the world in 6 days and rested on the seventh day, the number 7 is said to symbolize completion or perfection. I like that thought. Completion. Perfection. Like a circle. In mathematics, the circle is often considered the most perfect shape with its infinite number of lines of symmetry and continuous movement along a plane. Here I am finding myself as having almost come full circle in my life. One big circular loop, the circle of life. Ecclesiastes 3, 1 and 2 says, there is a time for everything and a season for every activity under the heavens, a time to be born and a time to die. Solomon, in his wisdom, also said this, all come from dust and to dust all return. Sobering, isn't it? Yes, 7 decades of living will make you keenly aware of your mortality. This past year, I saw my best friend, since first grade, lose her husband to cancer. Another dear friend lost his life to ALS in less than a year after being diagnosed. And just last week, I lost a dear classmate unexpectedly. Cardiac arrest was given as the reason. She was doing great, and then she was gone, leaving her family and friends reeling with shock. This is where I want to remind us all, including myself, that we have a hope beyond this earthly life. John 11, 25 and 26 says, Jesus said, I am the resurrection and the life. Those who believe in me, even though they die, will live. And everyone who lives and believes in me will never die. Do you believe this? In the hope that sustains and encourages me as I approach the future, as the psalmist sings in Psalm 39, 7, but now, Lord, for what do I wait? My hope is in you. As I've aged, I've continued to grow spiritually and feel I have a closer, more intimate relationship with God. 2 Corinthians 4, 16 through 18 says, therefore, we do not lose heart. Though outwardly we are wasting away, yet inwardly we are being renewed day by day. For our light and momentary troubles are achieving for us an eternal glory that far outweighs them all. So we fix our eyes not on what is seen, but on what is unseen, since what is seen is temporary, but what is unseen is eternal. Yes, one day I'll close my eyes to a time here on earth and open them to eternity with Jesus in heaven. Until that day comes, I pray that God will use me to complete his purpose for me. I desire to use the remainder of my life to leave a lasting impact, a legacy to those whom God has blessed me with. Philippians 1:6 says, and I am sure of this, that he who began a good work in you will bring it to completion at the day of Jesus Christ. I know God is not finished with me yet. He has a work for me to complete. Yet I look to the hope that one day I will be with Jesus and maybe, just maybe, I will get to run again, only this time on streets of gold. Yes, we all know that someday our earthly life will end. But the good news is that ending here is just the beginning of forever.
Linda always has a great perspective on life. I love to see people like her who embrace their age. And we should embrace all seasons of our life, just like she's talking about here, and not try to act like we're 30 years younger. You know, I just love that. My kids kind of poke fun at me because, you know, I'm ready for grandkids. Bring them on. I'm ready to be a grandpa. You know, I ruck more than I run nowadays. And my kids poke fun at me because they say I'm turning in to the dad on the Progressive commercials. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, they're like, that is such a dad moment.
Yeah.
Every time I do something now, like somebody came into a restaurant the other day and I was like, they'll let anybody in here. And they're like, that is a Progressive commercial right there. But yeah, I mean, fighting your age is futile.
That's right.
Embrace it where you're at. But the point is, but you also shouldn't just lay down and quit. You know, the song that she referred to, that Toby Keith song, I actually played it for you before we started the podcast.
Yeah.
It's just a great song. It's just a great song of, I don't like using the term living in the moment. I think that term is overused, but truly live where God has you right now, and don't try to speed it up, but also don't necessarily try to slow it down. You know, be where you're at and love and embrace becoming the Progressive mom or dad. I mean, the Progressive commercial mom or dad.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, as a competitive runner, I can lament the fact that I may never run another sub 5 minute mile in my life.
I think you got another one in you.
I might, but probably not. But here's the thing. I can look at it that way and go, oh man, I wish I could run as fast as I used to be able to run. Or I can say, I'm about to go to the 60 to 64 age group and there's new opportunity there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's all perspective. There's good and bad in everything that happens, including aging.
Sure.
You know, Debbie and I keep talking about how it's weird how everybody else keeps getting older, but we don't. Mm. That's just kind of
weird
the way
how that happens.
It is. It's really strange. Ecclesiastes 3:1-2. There is a time for everything and a season for every activity under the heavens, a time to be born and a time to die. She says, having lost so many friends recently have brought me to face to face with my own mortality and has given me pause to think about how God wants to use me for his purpose in this stage of my life. It weighs heavily on my mind that there are many who do not know Jesus. Thus, I need to step out more and share my faith. You know, this is one of the good things about, I don't keep up with my old classmates from school. Mm-hmm. So I have no idea how many of them are gone.
Yeah.
It's kind of a positive to not keeping up with your old old friends. There are times, though, I think about my old friend Brett Taylor and where is he? And I've just never been able to find him. The problem with, you know, Facebook and stuff is great, but when one of your best friends' name is Brett Taylor, do you know how many Brett Taylors there are out there?
Really?
Oh, yeah. Oh, there's thousands of people named Brett Taylor.
The curious thing about Facebook, and it's almost scary, is you can type in an ambiguous name like that, and at least for me, more times than not, it puts the one I'm trying to find right at the top because it connects all the tentacles of your, which is kind of scary to know that somebody I hadn't talked to in 30 years, it puts them right at the top because it connects all the dots in the background.
Well, it may be that my friend Brett never started a Facebook account.
Yeah.
Knowing him, I could see that being the case. Right. He was kind of a withdrawn kind of guy.
Sure.
But anyway, that's. I thought about this idea of thinking about how heaven is going to be. It connected with this for some reason. That's where my mind went. And then I thought, you know, trying to think about what heaven's going to be like, because we all do that, right? We all think about what heaven's going to be like. And, you know, in Revelation, it talks about, but the reason why why Revelation is so cryptic and weird sounding to us is because you can't describe it.
Yeah, John saw it.
Yes.
But he sounds like he's on LSD when he's trying to describe it.
Yeah.
And it's for that reason. You know,
It's like trying to think of a color you've never seen before.
Yeah. I mean, it's hard to describe.
Yeah.
It's like seeing that thing at night. I think we, I feel like I'm having deja vu. I feel like we've talked about this. It's like being out at night and you're driving in your car and you turn and your headlights hit something. And I'm convinced this is why there's so many Bigfoot sightings, is because they see something and they can't describe it. You know, it's like, I saw this thing in the woods the other night when my headlights hit it. Well, tell me what it looked like. Well, I really don't know what it looks like. But, and you start trying to describe it and people are like, what were you drinking?
Yeah.
When you, and I think that's where John is he,
yep.
He saw firsthand
mm-hmm.
the glory of heaven.
Yep.
And all of its wonder and the things that are to come. And you just can't,
yeah,
you just can't describe it.
Yeah. That's the whole point. 2 Corinthians 4:16 through 18 says, therefore, we do not lose heart. Though outwardly we are wasting away, yet inwardly we are being renewed day by day. For our light and momentary troubles are achieving for us an eternal glory that far outweighs them all. So we fix our eyes not on what is seen, but what is unseen. Since what is seen is temporary, but what is unseen is eternal. She says, this scripture reminds me of the hope we have beyond this earthly life. Nothing can compare to what God has in store for us in heaven. The thing about this verse that I had never thought about before is that what if we thought about this on our fitness journey? Mm-hmm. What if we stood in front of the mirror mm-hmm. and we thought to ourselves, this is the temporary thing. Mm-hmm. This is not what I'm looking forward to for the future. My future is going to be different. My future is going to be a better looking body, a more fit body, a healthier body. I don't know. I just thought that was a try to picture yourself looking into the future mirror. Mm-hmm. And maybe that could encourage you and motivate you a little bit to get out there and get that exercise in, whatever it is that you're doing. What do you think?
I think that's a deep thought, Dean. I haven't ever thought about that.
I think the thing about getting older for me is that I think there are two things about getting older that I like. One is we're just wiser. We can put things in perspective because we've seen so much that it's a lot easier to kind of let, you know, to let things go. And then the second one is, when everything is going south, and a lot of times as you get older, that's what we think about. We think about how everything's going south. I can't see as well as I used to. I can't hear as well as I used to. I can't run as fast. I'm less coordinated. There's all these reasons to start going, man, I am just falling apart. But like the scripture says here, I'm getting better on the inside.
Mm-hmm.
And that's an absolute fact. That I am better on the inside. And so as much as we can look outwardly and look at all this stuff that's falling apart, or we can look inwardly and go, thank you, God, for what you're doing in my life.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I do. I look at getting older with excitement.
Mm.
I do. I just know that there are experiences ahead of me that I look forward to that you can't experience when you're younger. Grandparent is one of them.
Yeah.
People think I'm weird because I'm looking forward to that. I don't. I mean, I love the concept, but I mean, our society is so, I don't know what the word is for it nowadays. Everybody wants to look and act younger.
Yeah. We don't value age anymore.
We don't. And I think that, I mean, I tell my wife all the time, I love her growing older gracefully.
Yeah.
I love the occasional gray hair I see here and there. And I love that.
Yep.
And, but I don't know what kind of lie we have told society that is to be ashamed. We're to be ashamed of that because that's obviously the case. I mean, look at all the, we're not going to go into all the things that people are doing nowadays, but, yeah, I mean, it's the Bible said, what does it says about gray hair? A gray-headed man is the crown of wisdom or something.
Yeah.
I
can't remember the exact quote
that,
either,
yeah,
but yeah.
It talks
but
about,
it's good.
It's good. It's a good thing. Gray hair is a good thing.
Yeah.
It indicates
wisdom.
Yeah.
Philippians 1:6 says, And I am sure of this, that he who began a good work in you will bring it to completion at the day of Jesus Christ. She says, we are a continuous work in progress. As followers of Jesus, our goal is to look more like him each day. It's only when we completely surrender our hearts to Jesus that he can use us to shine his light into this dark world. This hit me the other day. It's time for us to open up our pool. Mm-hmm. And so I take the pool cover off. And whenever I take the pool cover off, I always wash it down really good before I put it away so that it'll be clean when I put it out the next year. Well, I did that. And this year it was particularly
dirty.
Funky.
Yeah.
There's some of the algae that was stuck to it. It was stuck a lot harder than normal for some reason. But anyway, I'm using a hose. I just use a hose and I spray it down, spray off the leaves and all the little stuff off of it. And it's, at first I was like, you know, it's kind of fun, you know, when you clean something, watching it get clean.
Sure.
It was kind of fun. But then over time, it's like, this has taken me forever because the hose wasn't quite powerful enough to do it. So I finally decided, you know what? I'm just going to get the power washer. I'm going to wash this thing off with the power washer, which maybe I should have done to start with, but I was enjoying it. Mm-hmm. I get the power washer out, and sure enough, boom, I get through a lot faster with that. But here's my point to this story is that I thought about how I get tired of it. Mm-hmm. I get tired of what I'm doing, and I just want to get to the end of it. Mm-hmm. We do that sometimes with running. We just want to get to the end of it. God never gets tired of trying to make us better, ever, under any circumstance, no matter how bad we are, no matter how hard we are to get along with, no matter our disposition, God always enjoys working on making us better if we'll just be receptive to it.
Yeah, I think, you know, a lot of times scripture hits me and you differently. We have different perspectives, but I think this scripture hit me in the same way it did you today, because I had some examples that kind of go along with that. And I guess my point is with the scripture that we need to do more things that have meaning. And you may say, well, washing off that pool cover, it didn't have meaning. It absolutely had meaning. Mm-hmm. We just sat here and talked about it for 5 minutes, and you paralleled it to our walk with Christ. Doing things that have meaning provide hope in other areas of our life, just like you talked about. And the more things we do that have meaning, the better our walk can be, if we let it. You know, the principles of growing a great yard, lawn, as they call it up north, are the same principles we need in our walk with Christ. You know, patience, it's seasonal, like we just talked about with age. Stress, you know, you've got to manage stress with the yard during the summer. I love working in my yard. It's one of my favorite. You got to kill the imposters. You know, those pesky weeds, clover and everything that pops up. The principles of endurance sport, running, walking, rucking, triathlon, whatever it is Linda talked about, she's biking some now, are the same principles that we need in our walk with Christ. Endurance, tenacity, grit, determination, all the things we talk about. Mind-numbing things. Social media calls deferred hope. You're seeing things that you don't have and you're envying those that do. Proverbs says, hope deferred makes the heart sick, but when the desire comes, it is the tree of life. Washing that pool cover off, in a weird way, it gives you hope. It gives you a sense of satisfaction. Great stripes in my yard. You know, I'm all about striping that grass.
I noticed them when I came up.
Absolutely. Yeah. Thanks for noticing. Finishing that 5K.
Yep.
That's hope. Catching that big fish. Creating that great dinner. Sewing that incredible quilt. All of these things are things that have meaning things that you can translate over to your walk with Christ. So do more things that have meaning. And how you can kind of judge that is things that have small wins along the way. Things that, you know, I'm never going to get done with my yard.
Yeah.
But I can get done at the end of the day and look and say, I did that.
Yeah.
And then tomorrow I'll go right back at it again. That's the funny thing about grass is you get it done, you got to do it again the next day.
Well, it's like running. It never ends.
But those are things that they form who we are. They make us better people. They help us in a strange way see our walk with Christ in a different light. Do more of those things and less of the things that don't have meaning. And can you find meaning in scrolling through social media? I'm sure there are instances.
Sure.
But by and large, it's much better to get out and walk or run 3 miles or to mow your grass. But find the meaning in it. That's my point. You mowing your yard can become mind numbing.
Sure.
Some people despise mowing the grass.
It's true.
But as we've said this whole time with Linda's story, it's all about our perspective. Choose to look at it as a beneficial thing. Find the value in that thing you're doing, and it will completely change it. It will go from something you hate to something you all of a sudden love.
Yep.
And it's a choice to do that. Amen. You can choose to be miserable in whatever you're doing, or you can choose to find the meaning in it.
Yeah. Good stuff. Questions. How old would you be if you didn't know the day you were born? The reference to the Toby Keith song. Now, I want to start out by saying this. I like the song. I love the sentiment of the song. I love the story of the song. It's great. Not a huge country music fan, but I like the message in the song. But this idea, this quote, is from Satchel Paige. I just want to point that out. Satchel Paige was he was a pitcher that pitched in the Negro Leagues. Might have been the greatest pitcher ever if he had been able to pitch in the major leagues before he was 40 years old. He was 42 when he started in the major leagues. But he was a great pitcher, and he didn't get a chance to. But he said, his quote is, "How old would you be if you didn't know how old you are?" And it's a good question.
I think I would be pretty young.
I think you would too.
I just looked at this past several days. I kind of made some notes. On Saturday, you know, Lane and Christian moved. So we moved them, lifting furniture. Mm-hmm. You know how taxing that is on your body.
Yep. And you were sore the next day, I'm sure.
I was sore. Sunday, I push mowed for 4 or 5 hours. Even though I have an incredible riding lawnmower, I still love to push mow.
Yeah.
And so I push mowed my yard out here. And then I walked and I rucked. Sunday, I was prepping, probably TMI here, I was prepping for a colonoscopy that I was going to have on Monday. So no food, planted 20 azaleas. Monday, I had the colonoscopy and I got out and did yard work. And then Tuesday, I spread 1,600 pounds of lime with a push spreader. And today, my body is saying, whoa.
I wonder why.
Overdoing it here. You are older than you think you are. So I think I would be pretty, because I love doing hard things. I mean, I actually kicked around the other day, and Holly looked at me like I had three heads. I was thinking how hard it would be to put my 55-pound rucksack and then push mow the whole yard.
Yeah.
And she was like, I think that's a step too far.
I don't know. But it's a good thought. And here's the thing that I think is important about all of this is the idea that you do things that younger people should do, but you're not trying to be that younger person at the same time. You've mentioned on here that you spent a lot of time running for years.
Yeah.
And then got to the point where you have become content with walking and now rucking because you're not overcome with this desire to, I have to be able to do the things that I did when I was younger.
And I struggled with that. You walked me through this period of time where the desire to chase those big goals kind of left at the same time it coincided with some injuries. And I just got to the point where I really felt at that time that God was like kind of pulling this away from me. And I struggled with that because I was more worried about my identity as the running guy than being content where God has me. And that was an incredible spiritual lesson that God taught me through those months of, because I told you, I said, Dean, I'm the running guy.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I'm not able to run right now. But through that process, God gave me peace with it. And now we have walkers in this running ministry that I probably would have been resistant to had I still been running as much as I was. Because for years, people had tried to say, you ought to introduce walkers and have their own. And I was like, no. Funny how God works.
Yeah, yeah. That surrender has led to other people watching that, everything that you went through. I mean, I watched all that, as you said, that the idea that I don't know that that's what I want to do. And then I could see that the wheels in your head go, okay, I'm going to accept this and see how this thing goes. And it went well. Well, that's a lesson to me personally. As a friend, just standing on the outside looking in, it's a good lesson for me to go, you know, to not be so dogmatic about holding on to everything that I want to hold on to just because I want to be seen as this person or that person. I've gotten so much better about that over the years with, you know, I am getting slower and it's not bothering me near as bad as I thought it would. I really thought it would just drive me crazy.
Yeah.
And it, now do I still want to strive to be as fast as I can be? Yes. I still have that burning desire I would love to run another sub 5 minute mile. I don't know if I ever will. But it's not going to be from lack of trying.
Sure.
But it's not because I'm trying to be younger. It's because I'm just trying to do the best I can with what I have right now.
Yeah. Good word.
Where are you in this circle of life journey? What do you feel God is calling you to do for completeness of His purpose? You know, I think it's just a matter of continuing to do things that draw me closer to Him. Because if I do that, then everything I do is going to be better. And I think that's why I can accept this idea that I'm getting slower is because in the grand scheme of things, that's not at the top of my list.
Right.
Top of my list is, well, what does God think about what I'm doing?
Sure.
Am I doing things in a way that is good for my representation of Christ? That's my prayer and that's my hope. And if that means, and I think I still do that because I still love the elite community of runners, but I've had younger runners that have come up to me and said, I respect you so much for what you continue to do, despite the fact you're getting old. Mm-hmm. They don't quite say it that way, but you know what I mean. There's a lot of respect out there for that. And I know I've got a friend of mine who he's basically quit running. Mm. He's getting older and he's getting slower and he can't handle it. Mm-hmm. And so he just doesn't run anymore. That's sad.
Yeah.
Because I know he loved it. So I don't know. And I feel like, you know, God has helped me cut out so much junk from my life. You know, I've got a relative that sends me messages all the time. And all these messages are ridiculous attacks. It's political stuff, and it's all just, we won't go into what all that is. But here's the thing, and here's how I've changed. In the past, my blood pressure would get up. I would just want to argue back. You know where my brain is now? My brain is, I feel bad for him.
Yeah.
He's literally brainwashed. I mean, literally brainwashed. He believes things that aren't true, and he can't see things because he's got this hatred for something that won't let him see things clearly. I don't want to be that person. Mm-mm. I do not want to be. And then God's gotten me to the point now where I can look at that and I can just let it go. I can say, you know what, whatever.
Yeah. I in that context, in that vein, I think, you know, the wisdom from aging, I think back to even earlier in this ministry, when people would attack us, you know, on social media and places. And I remember having these conversations with Mark Yoho, and I would just be like tied up in knots over things that people were saying. And I remember talking to Mark Yoho, and you've heard me say this statement on here before. He said, well, I look at those people as the biggest opportunities. And yeah. I was like, Mark, you're crazy. They're trying to tear down everything. And it's so funny how now, in the same way you look at people with sadness, I think that is a sign of wisdom, is I look at the same way now. When people attack us, it's, and I've talked about this on here, it's almost like, if especially if you're face to face with them and they're spewing vile things and things that aren't true, it's almost like God gives you a glimpse into their soul, and you can see what we as a ministry did is not what's driving those statements that they're making. It's something that's happening at home, or it's a death of a loved one, or it's, you start to, when people attack you, you start to understand it's not about me. Mm-hmm. You know, like Mark Yoho has said many times, we're just the mailman.
That's right.
We're just delivering the mail of what God's told us to deliver. And when people attack, this is where wisdom comes in handy, that we're able to look past that with compassion. And that is something I would not have done 10 years ago. No, I would have been tied up in knots and figuring out how can I go back at this person rather than just turning the other cheek.
Yeah. One of my favorite quotes is this: in the end, it's not the years in your life that count. It's the life in your years. What does this quote mean to you?
So Gay used to have, or still hanging up somewhere, she had a little plaque that said, I don't run to add days to my life. I run to add life to my days.
Yep.
And that's so true. It's again, it's the cliche that I just don't like, but it's appropriate here. Live in the moment.
Yeah.
Be happy with where God's got you. No matter the situation, He's got you there for a reason. And make the most of it.
Yeah. And don't be focused on all the negative things. That can just consume you. And it seems to be people actually seem to, I know it enjoy is the wrong word, but they amplify the victim mentality. And that's so sad to see. Now, are we victims sometimes? Sure we are. We've all been there. We've all had that opportunity where we were completely treated unfairly. Yeah. But I'm not dwelling on those things.
Don't give it a platform. You know, we watch, I've mentioned on here, we watch American Idol. And the other night, I can't remember if it was that Easter special or not, but this one young girl, she just was all tore up because she's really been pointing to Jesus. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's crazy. If you haven't watched American Idol ever, you need to watch this season, because it's like all of these artists are singing Christian songs. Yeah. They did the whole Easter special, but this one girl in particular, she sang a song that was not, it was a secular song the other night. It didn't have any language in it or anything like that. Well, people are coming after her now. Are you even a Christian? And things like this. Mm. Carrie Underwood made a statement that I love. She said, I'm going to give you three words that you need to remember. Post and ghost. If you're going to put something out there, put it out there, and then don't look at it again.
Yeah.
And that's how we need to do in our lives. We need to shine the light of Jesus and ignore the feedback.
Yeah.
Because the more we promote Jesus, the more we're going to be attacked.
Yep.
And you can't let that stuff get to you.
That is true. That is true. I'll tell you what, watching this season of American Idol, I've always liked Carrie Underwood, but not in particular. Just I've always respected her and thought she was a good lady. I really like her now.
I mean, she's got her hands in the air. I mean, she's just lush. She's letting the light of Christ shine.
And let me tell you, that version of How Great Thou Art that she sang, oh my. I mean,
she made that famous at the Grand Ole Opry when she did it. You know that, don't you?
No, I don't. I didn't.
She sang that song at the Grand Ole Opry, and then Randy Travis walked out and inducted her into the
Hall of Fame?
Grand Ole Opry.
Oh, okay, okay.
You know, invited her to be a member of the Grand Ole. So she's done that song twice. The first time she did it at the Grand Ole Opry, and you see that clip. I mean, just incredible. She's got some pops on her.
She does, and she's a good lady, just like you mentioned. Upward running is the best way to stay motivated for your fitness and faith journeys. You get these weekly podcasts, but there's so much more. We have proven training plans available for you, whether you're just at the beginning of your fitness quest or you've been running for 20 years. We have something for everyone, and it doesn't matter where you are with God either. We have something for you there too. If you're not a member, join today at upwardrunning.com. It is the best value you'll find to fuel both your faith and your fitness. All right, we're back, and this is from the Running Channel. World records broken during the TCS London Marathon. There were 41 records broken in the London Marathon. Some of them typical, some of them a little different. Tigist Assefa, she ran the fastest female-only race marathon, ran 2:15:50. We had somebody run the fastest marathon in a suit. Somebody ran 2:39 in a suit.
That's your PR, isn't it?
Yeah.
2:39?
Yep. Somebody ran the fastest marathon wearing Crocs, ran 2:48 in Crocs.
Wow.
Yeah. And I knew you'd like this one. The fastest marathon dressed as an elf.
Yes.
2:56. Fastest marathon dressed as a cave person, 2:57. The fastest marathon with Parkinson's disease. A guy ran 3:04 with Parkinson's disease. That's pretty cool. Fastest marathon dressed as a pirate. The fastest marathon dressed as an alien. The fastest marathon dressed as a crustacean. The fastest marathon dressed as a traffic cone. Fastest marathon by a mascot, a female mascot. Fastest marathon dressed as a television character, female television character. Fastest marathon dressed as a Spartan warrior. Fastest marathon with a subcutaneous defibrillator. That's interesting.
So how do they come up with these categories?
I don't know.
Because they said world records.
Yeah. Well.
So obviously these aren't certified world records.
Yeah. Fastest marathon with multiple sclerosis. A girl with multiple sclerosis ran a 3:53 marathon.
Hey, Dean, I can guarantee you a world record for you.
What's that?
The fastest marathon dressed as Sticky.
I could do that. Yeah.
And they would have to post it. I mean, they would have to.
It seems that way.
Add it to this list.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, it seems like it. Yeah. We'll have to do that. I got to get in the London Marathon first, I guess.
Yeah.
Fastest marathon dressed as a rotating puzzle cube.
So a Rubik's Cube, is that because they can't say the brand, I guess?
I guess. Fastest marathon with bilateral total knee replacements. That's an interesting one.
That's pretty impressive.
That is.
5 hours.
Yeah. Fastest marathon in a 10-person costume, 5:41. I just feel like I should be able to get some people together and break that one. Fastest marathon on crutches. A guy ran 5:59 on crutches. Fastest aggregate time to complete all world marathon major races with a stoma.
How many marathons are there? 4 or 5?
I thought there were 7, but I guess they're not counting 7 of them there. 2029. So, and then this one. This may be the most impressive thing of all of them. Jason Burberry set the record for the most underpants worn during a marathon. 52 pairs of underpants worn during a marathon. So people will do anything for attention, won't they?
Yeah.
Some of those are some pretty cool achievements, though. But some of them are just funny. Well, it's a time for Dean's thoughts. That's a time when I share something I've written about the intersection between running and faith. Negotiating. Some people love it. I'd say most people don't.
I love it.
So how about a lesson about it and how it applies to running? It's called Negotiation 101. Some people are uncomfortable in negotiating situations. To many, it feels like confrontation and argument. Some people love negotiating. My brother would rather negotiate a good deal than sleep. It's a topic we all think we understand, whether we like it or not. But do we fully understand negotiation and its implications? The classic confrontation that immediately comes to mind is negotiating for a new car. So let's look at what's involved in the back and forth in a new car purchase. We go to the car lot and we get out of our car. For the salesperson, the negotiation has already begun. He is looking at the car we already own, wondering if we intend to trade it in. He's watching how assertively we carry ourselves and the clothes we are wearing. He is trying to find any edge he can exploit, and we haven't even met him yet. When the introduction takes place, he's looking into your eyes and evaluating our handshake. He's memorizing our name because he knows that in a negotiation, using a name is an effective way to put us into a relaxed mindset. Then he begins asking questions to find out what we're looking for. There are a dozen more different things he is deciphering in that exchange. Once he narrows down our desires, he will bring us to the car he thinks best fits our wants and needs. Once he begins talking about the car, he's looking for a reaction to the things we say. When he notices that we raise our eyebrows when he tells us how much horsepower the car has, he drills down deeper on that subject. Then his objective is to get us in the car and experience it. He knows that once the haggling begins, if we have a positive feeling we associate with owning that car, we are more likely to buy it. After we have driven the car and he has shared all the positive information about it, we begin the process we call negotiating. You know, the part where he says, "I don't know if my manager can make that work." He comes back and says, "I have good news." And then he tells you that you're only $2,000 apart on your negotiation. The pressure begins. This deal is only available for a limited time. Five people looked at that car yesterday. You know, all the things that are designed to pressure you into making a decision now. My point is that we normally think about the negotiation as the part where we haggle about the price, and that is part of it, but it's not even close to all of it. Okay, so what does this have to do with running, or any exercise for that matter? Glad you asked. When it comes time to go for a run, we often negotiate with ourselves. We evaluate how we feel, the weather, our busy schedule, and all the things going on in our lives at that point. I want to make two points here. First, realize that the negotiation started long before that day. Like the salesperson who begins his negotiation as we get out of our car, we are evaluating ourselves way before we begin our debate about our workout. When we tell ourselves that we're really tired, that's a negotiating point. When we allow ourselves the option of not completing our workout for a reason other than injury, we're negotiating. When we think about the weather and how hot or cold it is outside, the process has already begun. I'm not saying we shouldn't think about those things, but we should not allow them to be part of the negotiation at all. Second, and more importantly, anyone who is good at negotiation knows we should always have a goal in the process. The best negotiators go into the discussion with an ultimate goal and a minimum they will accept, and they do not deviate from it. We should do the same thing with ourselves. Maybe our goal is to run 6 miles. Instead of negotiating whether or not we're going to run 6 miles, we can bicker over the pace. In this case, the minimum is that we will complete the 6 mile run. The negotiation is whether we do it at 10-minute pace or 10:30 pace. Put the emphasis on the proper part of the debate. Everyone knows the story of Abraham negotiating with God over the fate of the city of Sodom. Four of his family members are in a city, and he's asking God to spare the city so that they're not caught up in the destruction. He begins the negotiation by asking God to spare the city for the sake of 50 righteous people. If there are just 50 righteous people, couldn't he spare the city? God agrees. Then it's 40 people, then 30, all the way down to 10. And in this case, four of those 10 are Abraham's family members, so the number is really only 6. Of course, the city is still destroyed because God is always right. We can feel like we're negotiating with God all we like, but in the end, he is right. Whatever he asks us to do, we should do because he knows what is going to come from it, and he works all things together for good for those who love him. There are a lot of subtleties to negotiating, many of which we don't think about as negotiation. But all of those pre-haggling things have an impact on what ultimately happens. When you're negotiating with yourself over your workout, don't focus on the weak side of the deal. Getting the best deal possible means improving your fitness and health as much as possible. And don't negotiate with God. Like Abraham found out, it's just a waste of time anyway.
It's a great story, Dean.
You're a negotiating guy.
Yeah, I was thinking about it as you were reading it. I don't know if I'm as much a negotiating guy as I am. I like to get clarity up front.
Yeah.
You know, like, I'll never forget the time Lane cut his leg. We were out fishing. I mean, it sliced the back of his calf open. It's bleeding like crazy. We've got it wrapped up, and we walk into an emergency room, and my wife met us there, and they're starting to get him checked in. I said, whoa, whoa, whoa. I said, how much is this going to cost? Because we have a large deductible on our insurance, and the lady looks at me like,
and of course, people don't ask that.
Holly is peering at me like, what are you doing? I said, I need to know how much this is going to cost. And she said, well, we can't tell you that. And so this wasn't a negotiating tactic. It was, I want to get clarity before we go into this because you're at their mercy after that. She couldn't tell me. So I said, let's go. We're leaving. And so I wound up going to Holly's parents' house and I called a little clinic down in Panama City and went and got him stitched up for $250. That was probably the closest Holly has ever been to divorcing me. So I don't know if it's negotiating as it's much getting clarity. Like a car lot, that's the biggest thing is because, you know, it's $20,000 for this car, but they don't tell you about the $4,000 in tax title, tag fees, all this stuff. So, yeah, I just like to get clarity right up front. Just tell me what it's going to cost.
Yeah. I remember when I was down in South Georgia, I had a friend of mine. He was looking to buy a boat. Mm-hmm. And we had heard about this boat that somebody had for sale. I don't remember all the complete details, but I remember one line in the whole thing. We go down, we go look at this boat, and let's just say they wanted $2,500 for it. They tell us, well, you know, take it down, go take it out on the water and drive it. So we did. And about 50-100 meters out from the shore, the thing shut down and quit. We literally had to paddle the boat back to the shore with the covers from the engine just to get ourselves back to the shore. And of course, we put it back on the trailer. We took it back over to the guy's house. And, you know, at this point, Tim, the friend of mine, not real interested in this, in this boat. But the guy's like, well, you know, I'm sure it's not a big deal. It's something that can be fixed. You know, how much would you be willing to give me for? Because obviously he wasn't going to give him $2,500 at that point. And the guy kept pressing Tim to give him a number. And Tim didn't really want to give him a number. So finally, he says, I'll give you $1,200 for it. And the guy looked at him like he had just punched him in the mouth and said, you can just go to the house, you know, like get out of here, because he insulted him. And it's like, you asked.
Yeah.
Why are you being insulted when you asked? And you kept pressing him for that. But it illustrates why negotiating, I think, is so hard for some people.
Yeah.
Some people are so invested in what it is that they're trying to negotiate for. And then we feel insulted. We wind up, depending on which side we're on, we wind up overpaying for something because we get too emotionally involved. It's why the car dealer wants to get you in that car before you talk about price, because he wants you to feel good about it beforehand. He wants you to already be picturing that thing in your driveway before you start to haggle over the price. And we've got to be careful with that.
So probably one of the greatest salespeople on earth lives in Chattanooga, Tennessee. Have you ever heard me tell this story?
I don't think so.
Speaking of boats, my brother, he's going to kill me for saying this on here. He had a boat, really nice boat. We would go up to the lake with him and everything. And he and his wife decided that they were going to get out of boating. They just didn't have the time. They were about to have grandkids and saw this. So he was going to sell the boat. And so he took it to a dealership. They do like co-ops where the dealership will sell it for you and they'll take a cut of it. And it was a nice boat. And he took it to the dealership to sell it. And he left the dealership with a brand new boat.
Oh.
And he called me telling me about this. I said, who is that salesperson? I want to hire them. Because you go in to sell a boat and they sell you a brand new boat. I said, that is the greatest salesman in history right there.
Absolutely. That's funny. But the point is when it comes to running, walking, whatever it is you're doing, don't allow yourself the negotiating point of, I'm not going to do it.
Because the strongest stance in negotiation is having your mind absolutely made up before you walk into that dealership.
That's right.
It's having your mind already made up when you wake up in the morning.
Yeah.
You know, we always say, go ahead and decide what you're going to do when that whatever comes up during your run.
Yep.
You get that side stitch or you just feel like you can't go anymore. If I go into a dealership and I know I've got a number, and usually I just put the number out there. I don't even try to haggle down to it. I'm like, this is the number that I will pay. I will write you a check today. If you can't do this, I completely understand. But when you go in with absolute, but when you don't, when you go into a dealership and you don't really know what you're willing to pay, just like when you wake up in the morning and you're kind of, oh, I don't know if I'm going to run or not, chances of you paying more and chances of you not running are much higher.
That's right.
If you go in with that posture.
That's correct. Yep. So I asked our friend Perplexity.
About, do we need to give her a seat at the table?
We might need to.
Is Perplexity a girl or is that a guy?
I don't know. That's Perplexed. Sounds like a girl to me.
Okay.
Oh, man, we're going to get some hate mail on that one, aren't we?
That's stepped in at 13.
About bargaining with God. So this is what Perplexity said. Most Christian teaching discourages bargaining with God for several reasons. One, God's favor is not for sale. The idea that God's favor can be bought or manipulated contradicts the concept of grace. God's blessings are not earned through negotiation, but are given freely out of his love and mercy. And relationship, not transaction. Christianity emphasizes the relationship with God based on faith, trust, and submission to his will rather than a transactional exchange. Fasting or self-denial, for example, is about aligning yourself with God's will, not manipulating him. Third, God's will is not negotiable. The Bible teaches that God's will and plan are not open to negotiation. Obedience and faithfulness are expected, not as a bargaining chips, but as a response to God's grace. And then four, Jesus's example. Jesus taught his followers to pray, "Thy will be done," emphasizing surrender to God's will rather than trying to control outcomes through deals or vows. And the practical application is this. Pray honestly, not transactionally. Scripture encourages believers to be direct and honest in their prayers, asking for what they need without bargaining. The focus should be on seeking God's will and trusting his goodness, not on trying to secure a specific outcome through negotiation. And then growth through struggle. Wrestling with God, struggling with doubts, fears, and questions can be a path to spiritual maturity, but it is different from bargaining. The struggle can change and deepen one's faith. That's pretty good, isn't it?
It is. I'm thinking out loud here and on the fly. I don't know that I completely agree with the practical application.
Yeah.
Because I think as we bargain with God, as futile as that sounds, yes, that's not going to do anything on God's stance, but it does a lot for us.
That's a good point.
When I go through that exercise of, God, if you get me out of this, I will do this. That God is sovereign. He's going to do what he's going to do, but it kind of
puts helps, you on the hook.
It helps me be more accountable. So
yeah.
I guess
point.
I take a little exception with Perplexity there.
But
I think that is a good exercise to go through. It's not me thinking that I'm going to get God to change his mind. It's me working through whatever it is I've gotten myself into.
Yeah.
And how I can allow God to show me the path out.
Well, sort of like Abraham. You know, Abraham was trying was bargaining with God, and God seemed to be bargaining with him. But in the end, God was going to do what he was going to do. And Abraham got a valuable lesson out of that. Yeah, right?
Sure.
Same thing.
Absolutely.
At Upward Sports, we're all about helping you on your fitness journey, but we also want to support you on your faith journey as well. You can sign up today for the self-paced Bible in a Year Challenge and listen every day as I read through the entire Bible in 365 episodes. As a bonus, I also give you helpful tips of the day and finish with an encouraging quote in each episode. You must be an Upward Running member to participate in this exciting and edifying challenge. Sign up and start listening today. Every week, I share a reason why running and or walking is so awesome. This week, it's connections. So let me explain what I mean. About a month or so ago, one of my former college athletes had a baby. Well, her sister was somebody who also ran with that team. And I sent her a message and said, congratulations on becoming an aunt and that kind of thing. And it wasn't her first time. But anyway, I thought I'd ask her, hey, you want to go for a run? I haven't talked to her in a couple of years. And so we went for a run. I really enjoyed just catching up with her. And then this week, I decided, well, I like that so much, I thought I'd contact one of my other college athletes that lives local, and I went for a run with her. And, you know, the thing about running is that these connections that you make with people, they're just different than other nothing strikes me about trying to call somebody up that I just, you know, ran into or happen to know for any other thing. It's just for running, I feel like it draws you closer together as people. So that connection for us, for me, with these ladies was really strong. And I'm just interested in what's going on in their lives.
Yeah. I mean, it's, you hear this in sports like golf, you know, anything running, walking. I mean, you're going to be out there for an hour with this person. So you can create a good friendship with somebody in that amount of time. If you don't do these things, I mean, I'm not saying friendships can't be deep, but you create a deep friendship. I mean, I'm thinking of Thomas, you know, our associate pastor. We go walk several times a week together, and you know, we're talking anything from kids to he'll drop a theological bomb on me that I wrestle with for the next 3 weeks, and we debate and kick it around. And but yeah, I mean, that it's great to go running and walking by yourself sometimes, but it's also great to invite people that they might not even like it. Just go for a walk with them, and they'll learn to like it.
That's true.
So yeah, there's a lot of value there
for sure. Well, last week we had the Boston Marathon that we talked about. This week it was the London Marathon. They broke the world record for the most participants in this one, or most finishers, I think it is. They had over 56,000 finishers, which by almost 1,000, they broke the record that New York held. So now I'm sure New York's going to be looking to try to break the London record. I've already talked about Tijis Assefa, who set the women's only world record in this race. It was a pretty good race overall, but one of those where once she pulled away, it was pretty much over. And the same thing happened in the men's race. But in the men's race, I actually got up at 4 o'clock in the morning. I actually purchased a VPN.
Of course she did.
And got up early to watch this race because I thought, this is a chance. I'm telling you, the sub-2-hour marathon, this guy, it would not surprise me.
You wanted to witness history.
And I thought, if that happens and I miss it, I'm going to be mad at myself. So Sebastian Solway, he took off in the 20th mile of the race and ran a 4:18 mile for the 20th mile of this race and just blew everybody. You know, everybody else ran. Everybody else got 10 or 20 seconds faster and still wasn't even close to keeping up with him. It's pretty amazing. He wound up running like mid 202s, 202:30 something or something like that, which actually this is only his second marathon.
What is that? I mean, that's only what, I'm trying to do the math in my head. 1.75% away from the world record.
Yeah, it's close. It's close.
It's amazing how you can get that. We've been stuck at roughly that level or even less for so long now.
Yeah, it has been a while.
You got to think it's going to happen here pretty soon.
Well, I don't know that he's the next Kelvin Kiptum, but
Kelvin
it would
Kiptum,
not surprise.
Was that the guy that died?
Yes.
Yeah.
Who ran 2:36, I think, is the record. This guy that now the weather wasn't perfect in London. It was a little bit warm and humid for that particular day. The sun was out, which is unusual for London. A lot of times it's overcast and cooler. So the conditions were not great, and he still ran pretty fast. But anyway, Sebastian Solway, remember that name? He may be the guy that does it. Kipchoge ran. Of course, Kipchoge's 40 years old now. Yeah. Still running at the top of the game, was still with that lead pack when Solway pulled away. He was still with that lead pack. He wound up finishing sixth overall. He ran 2:05 for a guy who's 40. It's just ridiculous that he can still run that fast. And I don't know if you saw Alex Yee. You know who Alex Yee is.
Yeah.
He's the Olympic champion in the triathlon. He ran 2:11.
Yeah.
So that was pretty. That's his first marathon. It's a pretty good debut marathon.
Yeah.
For a guy who's, you know, obviously a runner, but that's not his first discipline. We also had the Drake relays and the Penn relays this past weekend, which are two of the best college meets on the planet. Those were really good. We had a high schooler who ran under 10 seconds for 100 meters, only the second person ever do that. So lots of good running news this week. It's that time of year where track meets are all over the place, and I love it.
Mm-hmm.
But let me tell you what happened. So I told you I got a VPN so I could watch the London Marathon. So my computer is like it's in
London.
Well, during that process of purchasing this VPN and stuff, I had emails back and forth. You know, you got to... You know, they send you a confirmation in your email and you have to accept it and all that stuff. Anyway, so obviously I was on my email, work email. So 6:30.
I know where this is going.
Yeah. 6:30 in the morning, I get a message from Les,
yeah.
Saying, are you in London? It's like, no.
He did the same thing with me during a leadership meeting, asking if I was in Canada, because I get a VPN to watch Heartland.
Okay. Yeah.
And he was like, are you in Canada? I'm like, no. Why are you asking?
That's funny. He gets those alerts.
Yeah.
So anyway.
He's watching out for us.
Good. That's true. That is exactly what he's doing. So I'm not complaining. I just thought it was funny that I got this email at 6:30 on a Sunday morning. Our trivia question for this week is this. Tejas Dassefa ran 2:15:50 to set the women's only world record at the London Marathon, but the course record for the London Marathon is 2:15:25, set way back in 2003. Of course, back then it was a mixed race, so that's why it wasn't a women's only world record. Who holds the London Marathon course record since 2003? In this era where everybody's running so much faster, do you not find it unbelievably incredible that that record is still there?
Yeah.
If you know the answer to that, send it to dean@upward.org and be the first member to send me the correct answer, and you'll win $20 off in the store. Our motivational thought of the week comes from Jim Ryan, one of my favorite runners ever. He said, motivation is what gets you started. Habit is what keeps you going. You know, most people look for motivation kind of to keep them going, but motivation is a temporary thing.
Yeah.
You gotta.
Motivation's only a match.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. You gotta keep the fire burning, so you gotta have other means to do that.
Sure.
All right. Well, that wraps us up for this week. Don't forget to tell your friends about this podcast, share it with others, and help us out.
Coach a 5K challenge in your community.
Yeah, do that.
Reach out to us. Get the information. We'll have somebody call you and talk you through it. But it really is, if you can push play on your computer, you can facilitate, lead, and coach a 5K challenge in your community and let others experience what you already know.
Absolutely.
That this is one of the greatest sports on earth. And help other people see that.
Amen. And until next week, may God bless every step of every run and or walk. Go out there and shine your light.
Good job, Dean.
For more information about Upward Running, visit upwardrunning.com. If you have questions about your salvation, click on the Peace with God tab. There is nothing more important. Thanks for joining us today.